This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So he was in a good place to make whatever decision, the top of his game. Such a consequential president of the United States, a Mount Rushmore kind of president of the United States.
Are
want
you
to
really
know what comes next?
That he belongs up there on Mount Rushmore. What? Lincoln and Joe Biden.
But you got Teddy Roosevelt up there, and he's wonderful. I don't say take him down, but you can add Biden.
It's like if inflation hit Mount Rushmore, you just got to add more to it.
Nobody asked her, should we take down Teddy Roosevelt? Like, she responded to a question nobody asked. It wasn't as if they were saying, oh, should we take down one of these guys and put Joe Biden? No. I'm not saying that. I just want to put Joe Biden up there more.
Do you listen to the way he like goes into it extra too? Or she, the way she's like, no, really?
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt, Joe Biden. I don't go, oh, okay. Like, it's not like I disagree with your point, but I see where you're coming from now.
It's as if she said it, and then is it Leslie Stahl that's interviewing her? Kind of questions it, and she goes, oh, did I just say that? Yeah, I'm going to have to keep going with that then, because I'm on record now. I guess we're going to do this.
I think it's really important that we continue to push these things out there for people to understand. You might hear a clip of Nancy Pelosi that seeps into what you normally consume, which is her saying, you know, like, Kamala's done the work. That's, by the way, one of the stupidest but most frequently repeated phrase, do the work. What the hell does that even mean? Kamala says that all the time. We just got to do the work. Like she's going to get credit. It's like a participation trophy for your future. That if they show up and they do the work, because what happens if you haven't met the success that is at the end of the work? You just do more work. It never ends, which means there's always an election cycle that they need to get through because it's important that they do the work. What? It doesn't make any sense. However, when you hear Nancy Pelosi show up and she starts saying positive things that maybe sound a little more toned down than Joe Biden should be on Mount Rushmore, you got to put it all in the context of the same brain as producing these things. Every time Nancy Pelosi comes, how are her stocks doing today? Has anybody checked?
No, I haven't checked, but I should. I will.
It would be worthy of note.
Yeah.
Steve Moore is normally with us right now. And we knew when the economy was doing, the markets were doing what they were doing today, and we saw what was happening in Japan, South Korea, other places last night when their markets were opening. It's very often that Steve Moore, he gets scooped up. We get big leagued and we understand and respect it. But let's go to, he was like just on Fox right now. So let's listen to his reaction today to the economy.
People keep asking me, well, you know, should I buy stocks? Should I sell? Is this a, you know, do you buy in this? Is this a buying opportunity? Maybe. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen tomorrow with this market. But I do think it is a correction. There was a lot of irrational exuberance. And you're right. There's a multitude of factors that affect why the market goes up. I remember, you guys may be a little too young, but I remember 1987. The 1987 stock market crash, which was horrendous. And 2 months later, the stock market was right back to where it was.
So. Well, Jackie over here beside camera two says, hey, the market's on sale. It's like going to the shopping mall, right?
Do you know what's so funny about where we are now with the high price of the stock market? The flash crash of 2010 was like, oh my gosh, you glanced at your, I was on my honeymoon. It was down 1,000 points. That was exactly. That was unprecedented. Now, 1,000 point drop is a couple percent.
Yeah. You
know? So the problem is, though, that they're reacting right now to what's going on, obviously. And I appreciate that he's kind of going, well, we don't really know. Because there are people on the right who are pulling their hair out now saying, you know, this is the Biden-Harris administration. This is what we all saw coming. I don't know what's going to happen by Friday. I mean, people might be getting a sweet deal on Monday that turns out to be a good deal on Friday. So I'm not going to get super emotionally saturated in what's going on in this moment. But in the broader understanding of what people are living through right now with you know, the ability, like, first of all, the real estate market. It's kind of crazy. And we're going to talk to Stewie here in less than 15 minutes about where that market is and how the Fed holding rates last week, like what kind of move was that? A lot of people saying they should have dropped rates. They didn't drop rates. They held them. They think they'll do in September. That will maybe be a better timed, politically timed reaction that we'll see out of those rates once they get dropped in September, if that actually happens. But people who, if you're like me and you've got a 2-point-something% interest rate on your house, I really would like to build a house, and we are moving into the process of doing that. We've been thinking about it for a long time. We were going to do it right around when COVID set in, so that derailed everything. It seems really ridiculous to think that I would give up a 2% something interest rate for whatever the rates are at right now. If the rates do come down, then the market's going to become more competitive. And so you probably will have price wars that make houses even more expensive. That's a big level financial issue. Make it smaller. Everybody knows what it's like to go to the grocery store and have it be, I can't fill my cart the way I used to. Everybody knows what it's like to go to the gas pump repeatedly and you're always paying $3+ a gallon of gas. And you remember what it was like. When I remember filling up one time at the gas station down here in Missouri, right across the river, right across the Stan Musial Bridge coming into Missouri. And I think I was paying like $1.29 a gallon. And I remember being like, this is insane. This is crazy. And then I remember hearing people on the left being like, you know, gas, low gas prices is not good. And I was like, I'm feeling pretty good about it. There's always a political spin to everything. But you can't be a consumer. You can't be a provider right now in August of 2024. Regardless of what anybody says on any yappy talk show like mine or any cable news channel like Fox or MSNBC, CNN, CNBC, so on and so forth, you could turn all of that off and just go on your own experience and you're not feeling good about it.
It's something like 25% extra cost to just everything. Everything that you buy compared to 3-4 years ago. And it was a weird reminder because you get so used to it that you just start to be like, well, that's just the way things are. It doesn't have to be this way, though. I just went, and it was a good reminder, earlier this year in March, I went to Japan. Well, the dollar is real strong against the yen right now for a variety of reasons. And it was that. It was literally 33% off of everything just because of the exchange rate. And it was a reminder, oh, this is kind of what it was a couple years ago. And it reminded me, we don't have to accept that this is the new normal.
You're like stuffing goods in your pants and everything so you can make it home with maximum stuff.
You're kidding, but yes.
Like
Annie,
what?
I bought an extra suitcase while we were there.
Because it was
just to bring stuff home.
Yeah.
Because it was so much cheaper.
I don't know how much the other nonsense that goes along with an election cycle. You know, wherever you are on Joe Biden, fine. Mount Rushmore? I mean, they're pushing really, really hard. And it's a constant effort to try to move the understanding of normalcy so that if you can say out loud with a straight face, yeah, Joe Biden should be on Mount Rushmore, that makes the other crazy things that you're saying that are just a little bit less crazy than that, which is pretty much everything, a little more palatable, a little more understandable. If the other things are not the most outrageous thing you've heard that day, then you kind of change and shift your thoughts and opinions on what is an acceptable truth to tell from our elected officials. Kamala Harris doesn't say anything. It's actually impressive to be able to consistently have a microphone, have a platform, to consistently be able to address issues without saying anything at all. Like, take, for instance, inflation.
What else are you going to do to fix this problem with inflation?
All right, thank you. Well, let's start with this. Prices have gone up. And families and individuals are dealing with the realities that bread costs more, that gas costs more. And we have to understand what that means. That's about the cost of living going up. That's about having to stress and stretch limited resources. That's about a source of stress for families that is not only economic, but is on a daily level, something that is a heavy weight to carry. So it is something that we take very seriously, very seriously. And we know from the history of this issue in the United States that when you see these prices go up, it has a direct impact on the quality of life for all people in our country. So it's a big issue, and we take it seriously. And it is a priority, therefore.
She basically just said that there is an economic principle known as inflation.
And it took a while.
I mean, period. She basically said that in economies, inflation can occur.
It affects people. It's not just about numbers, though.
And dogs. No, just people.
It affects people.
Dogs. Why she hate dogs?
I take her at her word, though, that she's taking this very seriously.
I just figured it out.
Okay.
This is a big moment. You know how we just played last week the song Chacarone? And how they figured out the cadence and the hook.
Oh, yeah.
But not the details.
Yeah.
She is Chacarone.
Okay. Okay, I'm with you.
It's like... Chacarone.
Yeah.
Chacarone. And at the end, you walk away and you're like, yeah, Chacarone. That's a great song. I really vibe to that. What are the words? Well, it doesn't really matter. We can sell it. We can market this. We got the hook. We got the beat. The people don't even care about the details. It'll work. Trust me. She's Chacarone.
As somebody who's been affected by inflation, I am very, very glad to know that the possible next president of the United States is taking it seriously, first of all. What I didn't hear, though, and does not give me a whole lot of comfort, is that she didn't say that she was going to fix it. She did say she's taking it seriously.
Yeah,
I'm not saying she didn't address a plan. She didn't say that she had a plan.
Yeah.
She didn't give the details of a plan or say that she had a plan.
And if you're Leslie Stahl, how long do you sit there and go, not say, woman? you're giving XX a bad name. To be very specific. How do you listen to that as an interviewer and go, you're not saying anything. You're not answering the question. Because if Trump talked like that, they would totally call him on it. And sometimes Trump does talk like that. He does the filibuster.
Yeah.
He doesn't stop talking. He answers the question in 100 words that really needs about 10.
Absolutely.
But he answers it. She goes 200 words and says, like, negative thing. Like... Like, you actually take backward steps by the time you're done with the conversation.
Like, I understood inflation better before hearing her explain it?
Yes.
I think you might be right. The other thing is that Trump, while he does give an answer, once in a while, he will do the thing where he says, yes, I will deal with this war. And you go, what's your plan? And he goes, I'm not going to tell you.
But he explains, if I tell you, then they know.
That's
if
exactly
I tell
right.
you, I can't negotiate the way I need to negotiate. He doesn't say that when it comes to the border wall. He doesn't say that when it comes to, you know, providing tax relief for the American people. He's got a plan. And he'll sit there and he'll explain the whole darn thing to you if you want to hear it. But he's got a plan. And he's got people. And it's just the opposite with Kamala. She says there are so many words and nothing is said. And it's actually really impressive. All right, let's take a quick break here. We're going to talk to Stewie. When we come back, he's going to be in studio with us. I'm excited to talk to him about the Fed holding rates last week and what that means right now, watching the markets do what the markets are doing. And you okay?
Brad hit his head on the mic.
Yeah. Are you good?
Sorry. Yeah, I'm good, I guess.
He's doing a lot. He's moving a lot.
All right. Let's take a quick break and get Stewie, my friend and partner from Stewart's American Mortgage, sponsor of the show, in studio. When we come back, if you got questions that you think Stewie might have the answer to, you can leave them there in the Annie Fry YouTube live chat as well. Yeah. There she is. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Macaron. Yeah, macaron. No. Chacaron. 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 Chacaron.
So you're now no longer are you necessarily keeping those private files in some file cabinet that's locked in the basement of the house. It's on your laptop, and it's then therefore up here in this cloud that exists above us, right? It's no longer in a physical.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Place.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
As expected, the Federal Reserve is leaving its benchmark interest rate unchanged. This is a good indication that the previous 11 hikes are doing their job in slowing inflation. While there weren't any cuts Wednesday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said during a press conference that a rate cut could be, quote, on the table. Well, at the central bank's next meeting in September.
CBS News, they're reporting on the Fed holding rates where they were last week. That's happened, I think, on Wednesday. Stuart Rosenblum from Stuart's American Mortgage, a sponsor of the show and a friend of mine, and I am a customer of his twice, bank alone, myself with Stewie, is in here to talk a little bit about what the Fed did last week. I mean, they say that it's holding inflation the way it was expected. I mean, when you hear that they're holding rates, what does that mean to you, Stewie, especially in conjunction with the market?
Well, the Federal Reserve wanted to see some more consistency overall, that inflation is dropping, that the economy is kind of at a pace where it's slowing down, but it's not getting hurt too much. And that's their indication that if we're in the right trend come September, we'll probably cut the interest rate. So the last couple months, we've seen that slide in the inflation. We've seen it drop back, and they're starting to feel comfortable about cutting it. My opinion, they're way too slow. They probably should have cut it a month or 2 months ago, because now we're seeing 4.3% unemployment. Some numbers are coming out that are indicating that the economy may be entering a recession. And this is bad news for the Fed because this is exactly what they don't want to happen. They don't want the higher interest rates and the slowdown in the economy all of a sudden to damage our overall economy to the point where we're entering a recession. So that soft landing, quote unquote, is turning into a hard landing right now, and they're all panicking. So come September, we're definitely going to see a rate cut if this continues.
Yeah.
Now it becomes a question of, is it just 0.25%? Maybe it's going to be more than 0.25%. Hmm. So they're in a little bit of a state of the panic, and the markets are kind of reading it that way, and that's why you're seeing what you're seeing in those stock market right now.
So, Stewie, let me ask you a very basic economic question, because I think people, some people understand this stuff hand in glove. Other people don't understand all of it. They just know that it's more expensive to go shopping everywhere, and that it's harder to build up a savings, easier to swipe a credit card right now. That's what a lot of people understand. When we're talking about actively trying to slow down the economy, you know, on the surface, that sounds like why would we ever want to slow down the economy? What's the purpose behind that?
Well, if everybody has a lot of money in their pocket and they want to buy a car, and the car is, say, $30,000, but there are 100 people that want to buy that car, all of a sudden the manufacturer is going to say, hey, $30,000, I'm going to charge $40,000 or $50,000. So it becomes too expensive for the average person to buy that car. If they raise the interest rates, it's too difficult for 100 people to buy that car. There's less demand for it, then the price stays intact, or it even drops if it's even too much expensive to be able to buy it. So the Federal Reserve raised the interest rates, causing us to be too expensive to borrow money. And if it's too expensive for us to borrow money, we're not going to buy those products. There'll be more supply of those products and the prices will drop. The challenge is you don't want to hurt the economy overall by raising those interest rates where buyers are just not buying anything anymore. Then you have all this new supply and inflation is going to go down, but you have economic downturn, and that's what they don't want to see.
So what I hear the current administration, the Biden-Harris administration, saying quite often is that they've brought inflation down, but big corporations are refusing to lower prices. Is that something, is that an accurate depiction of what's going on? Like, what are they talking about when they say that?
And I don't think that this administration did anything really to improve inflation. I think the Federal Reserve contributed to inflation dropping back, but I like to look at history. And when the Spanish flu happened in 1919 or so, the year after that, inflation was 21%. And the reason why it was so high is because manufacturers didn't have people around and there were no items to produce. So obviously there were less items and people had money to spend. They would spend a lot more, pay a lot more for that particular item. As the supply chains picked up, then all of a sudden there was more supply overall. And therefore, we saw the prices drop and was minus 16% the year after that. So you went from 21% to minus 16%. Now we're in the same situation. We went through COVID. Mm-hmm. We didn't have manufacturers all over the world. It's a little more complicated because we're intercontinental. We're not just local here in the United States. So we're depending on food from Ukraine or other places. And so when you're dependent on those things, eventually everybody's supply chains will pick up. And that, accompanied with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, will ultimately drop them. But if you go to a corporation and you say to a corporation, hey, I'm going to tax you more, is that incentive for them to produce more? No. So when you're in a situation where there's not enough supply, you want to incentivize corporations to go ahead and produce the items that everybody wants to buy, mass produce them so the prices go down, and then you'll get the result. Well, I don't think this administration was in that type of philosophy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Republican side of the administration is, hey, reduce taxes, companies will go ahead and invest, they'll produce more, and at the end of the day, you'll have more supply and that'll keep the prices down. This administration, someone's going to have to tell me, you know, I don't want to get too political, but someone's going to have to tell me what they did to bring the prices down. I don't see it. I think it's the Federal Reserve's actions, which is not impacted directly from the executive branch.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just convenient too to be able to blame somebody else, and
finger pointers everywhere.
My assumption is usually that there is some blame being thrown around. We've got Stuart Rosenblum of Stuart's American Mortgage in studio with us right now, and I've got a couple people asking questions here in the chat. We might get to those in a minute, but it does look like from an economic standpoint, I mean, the stock market is gone south today in a pretty big way. Last time I saw it, it was 900 points or something down. It's moved around a little bit. Do you tie what's happening today? It happened on Friday as well, to the Fed's decision specifically?
No, I think the unemployment numbers came out, and those unemployment numbers were much larger than expected. So all of a sudden, people aren't working, and people are losing jobs, and no new openings are happening. That's a clear indication that the economy isn't growing. And all of a sudden, it spooked the market. And all of a sudden, now we're in a situation where everybody's saying, hey, the economy's not doing as great as what we thought we were. We're going to escape the stock market because stock market's based on profits and what companies are going to do. And if companies are not going to earn more money and profits are going to be down. And by the way, a lot of recent announcements by some of these companies is that their profits are dropping and they're not making the kind of money they were making. These are all indications that hey, you know what? It may not be a good economy. I don't want my money in the markets where it's going to continue to drop. The values of the company, it's going to continue to drop. Great for interest rates. For mortgage rates, but not great for the overall economic condition, or, you know, that bad word recession is on the threshold.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because I hear the word recession and it's always used through a very political lens, which is why, Stewie, I like to have you in here, because you're a money guy, you're an economy guy, and you're trying to get Republicans and Democrats and everybody in between into a house that they can afford, that they love. That's your business model, and I've seen it over and over and over again. But when the word recession comes up in August of an election year, that looks like a huge slam dunk against the current administration. And so you hear pundits talking about how, like, a recession is good for Donald Trump's chances in November, but it's not good for the people who are going to have to go vote on either side of the aisle. Are we actually in a position where recession is the next step here on the pathway in this economy?
I think we're actually there. If you look at prior reports on economic growth, they were specific sectors, the medical sector, the government sector. Those sectors were doing really, really well. When you go to private enterprise, not that many sectors were doing as good as the medical sectors or those government sectors. So there was clear indication as far as to vote or who you're going to vote for. You're going to have to look and see what the administration that's in now or what other administration you're going to vote for, whether or not you're better today than you were 3-4 years ago. So that's the biggest decision I think anybody has to make. If you're a business owner or you're looking for a house or you see interest rates at the levels that they are, if it doesn't help you, you got to turn around and say, hey, this is maybe not a good option for me. I need to try something else. So it's good for mortgage rates, what's happening right now. It's bad for the overall economy.
Stewie, with everybody watching the stock market, how much is that an indicator? How much can we watch the stock market to determine whether or not we're actually going into recession?
Well, there's two things you have to look at. Okay, first of all, unfortunately, our country is a knee-jerk responsive country. You hear some bad news, all of a sudden, boom, everybody panics. We had that with political situations. We had that with terrorist situations. We had that, oh my God, the world's going to end. So I expect there's going to be some kind of rebound here. I wouldn't be surprised if the president administration comes out and says, hey, you know what? Calm down. Everything's going to be okay. So there'll be a little bit of a rebound. But I think we are at the point and have been at the point where the growth of the economy has slowed down tremendously. That's the indication that the Federal Reserve needs to cut those rates, because you don't want a train to run out of gas. Then you're really going to be in trouble trying to bring it back up. So being that we're knee-jerk, I think it's going to bounce back a little bit, but I don't think it's going to go back to the perception of what it was. You know, those guys on Wall Street, overall, they're not that stupid. You know, and they when they see political things happening, they say, okay, yes and no. But when they see the reports like unemployment coming up to the numbers that they are, and they see economic growth numbers dropping, they see the horizon. They know what's coming. And they may bounce back and take this as an opportunity to buy those stocks, but they know that unless the Federal Reserve steps in and does the things they need to do to stir up more activity, we're in for a pretty rough ride.
Ugh. Stewie from Stewart's American Mortgage in with us right now. If you want to contact him directly, 314-324-4440. You can call or text him. That's his direct line, 314-324-4440. When you're talking about mortgage rates right now, they apparently in the last week, less than a week, have come down markedly so. But I also want to ask you about the 2% rates. You got me one back a while back. We refied and we got mine under 3%. I'm very excited about that. But are those, when people are thinking Like, let's say that something in the fives becomes more the norm right now if the Fed does what they're trying to do, whatever. And they're holding out for when they're going to get a 2% again. Is that even...
I hope we're never in a situation where that 2% becomes available. Because
why?
That was artificial. When COVID hit...
That's right. Thank you for that.
When COVID happened, the government panicked. The markets panicked that we were, you know, Armageddon was here. Mm-hmm. So they dropped interest rates to zero, the Fed funds rate, that is, not mortgage rates, down to zero, to make sure that people were spending money, to give incentive for us to go out and borrow because it didn't cost us anything to borrow. So they were afraid that the COVID and the pandemic would cause the entire economy to collapse. So they did things to try to make sure that wouldn't happen. The same thing in reverse. You know, when the economy is steamrolling and prices are shooting up and inflation is going crazy because people have money in their pockets for whatever reason, then they're going to raise the interest rates to slow it down. So both of them are artificial. This is not, these 7% interest rates that we've been experiencing is artificially pushed by the Federal Reserve. The 2% that we had back after COVID or during COVID was artificially done. Both, this is the only tool the Federal Reserve has to try to limit or grow the growth or the paces of our economy. So I don't think we're going to see 2% barring another pandemic or wars or who knows what's going on.
So the cost for a 2% rate is pretty high.
Very high.
And so I think, you know, I'm not an economist in any way, shape or form, but I know the rate that I have and I'm thinking about trying to build a home. I want to build a home. But I'm looking at the rate I have and the rate I would have to get. I think I need to recalibrate my understanding of what is normal and like, okay, what's the good version of normal as opposed to the unrealistic version, which is what I have right now. Like, it's hopefully not going to come around again.
Well, this is the challenge you have with housing inventory, is that people don't want to sell their houses because they have a 2 or 3% interest rate. So if my payment at 2 and 3% is $2,000, why would I want to sell it and go to a smaller home with the same payment?
So inventory is super low.
So inventory is super low. But there is a situation where people want to move and have to move. And they've been waiting for the interest rates to drop. What we've seen over the last 24 to 48 hours is one of the biggest drops in interest rates that I've ever seen in my tenure. And I'm not a young guy. So it's been a while. And this gives an opportunity for people to say, hey, it's not 2%, but it's low enough for me to go ahead and sell. Now I'm going to make that move. If you're going to buy a house, or you're considering selling and moving, you ought to do it right now, because when these interest rates continue to drop, you're going to be in a position where, oh, everyone's going to say, oh, now I can afford it, and everyone's going to come out of the woodworks to buy that home. You're going to be in bidding wars. The prices may even go up even higher than they are today. Right now, you've got lower interest rates. You have inventory a little bit higher because there was a little bit of a slowing in the housing. Grab it now. Grab it now. If rates go down, you can refinance later. If you wait too long, everybody's going to scratch their heads. You're going to have too many bids and competition.
So, Stewie, what you're saying is, if you find that right house, and the only thing stopping you from buying it right now is because you're waiting for interest rates to go down to threes or whatever, you're not happening.
It's not happening.
So if you find the house you really want,
buy it,
because if you wait until rates go down and then more buyers are in the market, price war on housing, like the prices will actually go up on houses for sale if the rates come down a little bit more.
Well, you got to make the assumption that there are people out there that are waiting around for the proper payment. They are waiting until the interest rates are in the fives and sixes. Now we're there. They're going to turn around and say, hey, I want to go buy my house now. You have more buyers. All of a sudden, you're going to have to pay $20,000, $30,000 more. So would you rather pay a little bit higher in the interest rate and spend less on the house? Or would you rather pay more on the house and lower on the interest rate? I'd rather pay a little bit higher in the interest rate, get the price that I want and the house I want, less competition. And then 6-12 months from now, when the rates go down, refinance for free with the bagel loan.
You'll get
and get the lower rate. So you got to suffer for a short period of time. It's not a big deal.
Let's see here. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find exactly. Let's see. I'm going to find it. It was from Christopher. He was asking a question. It had a little bit to do with like defaults and short sales. I remember in 2008, I bought my first home with my husband from an estate sale. It was a super low-priced home because we needed 3 months to make it livable. But everything fell out of place in 2008. The housing market crashed. Are we anywhere circling around that right now, or is this just like an entirely different animal?
This is a totally different animal. Back in 2008, 2009, if you were a babysitter and you claimed you made $10,000 a month, you would get a loan. And those loans were adjusted to much higher rates with no caps. And all of a sudden, you had all these foreclosures. Now, it is true. Defaults are picking up. You know, if you look at credit card debt, we're up to, I think, $1.3 trillion with the average of 26, 27%. Interest on those credit cards. So defaults are picking up. People are starting to feel the economic hardships of the higher interest rates. We're seeing that, but you're not going to see this massive foreclosure, you know, a stream of people coming out all of a sudden that can't pay that, make their payments. Companies now and underwriters now are much more astute and looking at the numbers of whether a person qualifies or not. I think the days of just getting a loan because you say you make money are gone.
Yeah.
So you do have opportunities. There are programs out there if you're self-employed and you're not making income, but you still have to demonstrate some kind of ability to pay. And that's been instituted, so I don't think we're going to see that glutton of foreclosures.
Stewie, one last question while you're here, because I know that you've helped people and you've told me stories personally of folks who have come to see you in dire straits. When people take on credit card debt, it becomes a very personal, burdensome thing. It's very difficult on relationships. Money is one of the main things that causes problems in marriages. That right now, if you were to refinance, if you have equity in your home, and most people do right now, I would assume, because prices or values are so inflated right now, when you're burdened by credit card debt that you don't really see the end of, and you were talking about 26% plus interest rates on that credit card debt, is there a smart move possibly where you would refinance your home, maybe increase the interest rate on the mortgage that you have, but be able to knock out a huge chunk, if not all of that credit card debt?
Well, let me tell you what happened to a 97.1 listener who called us about 30 days ago. So they were in a situation where they incurred $75,000 in credit card debt. Never had credit card debt until the last year and a half. $75,000, they have a $200,000 mortgage, and their mortgage is 3.5%. Now, if you go get a home equity line of credit, that's an adjustable rate. You don't, it's not a fixed rate. It can go up from 10 to 20% overnight. Mm. It's scary, okay? If you go ahead and consolidate it, you may lose your 3%, but you're going to get something that's much better, much more stable. When we closed their loan, they actually told me that we saved their marriage, because their marriage was at the point where one was blaming the other one because of the debt, yeah, and they wanted to part ways. Being we were able to do that, we refinanced them, their quality of life is better, and their marriage is intact. At least we contributed to being intact. Hopefully they're getting some therapy as well. Yeah. But this is a life-impacting thing, and you have to measure the overall picture. You can't look and say, hey, I got 3% of my mortgage, but I'm paying 20 to 30%. I don't want to lose the 3%. You got to look at the overall picture. Now, when you do a cash-out refinance, when you pay off those debts, the rate is a little bit higher than if you take an existing mortgage and redo it. 6 months later, you just refinance it into that existing mortgage, rates will be dropped down, and you'll be in better shape. So fix yourself up now. Don't look at the small things that the 3%, you want to look at the overall picture and what's going to get you a better quality of life.
Yeah, I think it's so important for people to understand that you do have options, especially when it comes to that type of a thing. And a lot of individuals are finding themselves struggling with the credit card debt. You just can't get ahead of it. So if you're looking to purchase a home, and if you just have questions, or if you're like, good grief, this is exactly what I've been looking for, please reach out to Stewie and start the conversation. I've asked you, messaged you while I was walking at the gym the other day, and I was like, so because you had said that rates had come down, I'm like, what about home loans and home equity lines of credit? And you're like, no,
bad move.
Those are not coming down the way mortgage rates are. And so Stewie's never led me wrong, and he's very plugged into the economy, and I ask him many questions that I consider to be pretty stupid questions, but they might be questions that other people have too. So we always appreciate your insight.
I guarantee there's no questions that you ask that are stupid. No question at all.
That's generous and kind. Ryan, did you hear that? How nice he was?
Yeah, no, it's not true, though.
Ryan.
I'm closer to him than you are. You want me to give him a little?
You just do whatever you got to do. We appreciate you. Stewie, thanks for coming in today to talk to us about this. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Stewart's American Mortgage, 314-324-4440, 314-324-4440. You can just send him a text if you want to get in contact with him so that you can start the process possibly as to what might better your economic situation. And really, I mean, the burden being lifted off of your shoulders when you have a plan, boy, that's priceless. priceless. Reach out to Stewie, call, text 314-324-4440, or you can just Google The Bagel Loan to find out more. You'll get connected to him there. All right, Stewie, we appreciate you. We'll be back with Ryan and Brad in just a minute. Don't go away.
I hear the drums echoing tonight.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Just got done speaking with Stewie. I appreciate so much when he comes in and talks about these economic things. And there's so much noise that goes around it politically. I was just thinking today that, well, I was watching news come in last night on Twitter. I usually try to, especially on Sundays. There's not as much like news being reported on Sunday nights. There's a lot of long form shows or whatever. So I don't really watch TV, but I read a lot of Twitter, try to catch up on things. And the economic news that was coming out of Eastern markets, and, you know, there's sensational things on X that are like, tomorrow is World War III. Tomorrow starts World War III. And it just makes you go, holy crap.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at stuff and I'm always like, what is your source? And maybe I'm finding out ground level stuff, but I can't live like that, because I could go to sleep panicking about the absolute worst possible outcomes taking place on Monday, fall asleep reading it, wake up the next morning and not realize until the next night that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the emotional ask is huge if you want to be super plugged in and know everything. Then I just find myself doing that on Sunday nights the most, because I go to different places to get caught up on the news. On any weeknight when they're running the news, I can check out the different cable news networks and find out what everyone's saying. I can consume it through clips that are being published to social media outlets and stuff. But it's a tough go. That's what the kind of genesis of our poll today. What does this news cycle make you feel? Fear, hope, anger, or apathy? I think that everybody who's answering this question can pretty easily say all of the above. But I do think it's also important to look at those different things and just reflect on where you're living the most at the current moment in time.
It doesn't make me apathetic. I know that. It makes me want to be apathetic and unable to do it, because I can't completely disengage. And I don't think it's because of what we do.
If you weren't doing this, though, you might be able to do it. Sometimes I wonder if I would be more intense about it if I didn't do this for a living. It's like having to be in it all the time. I have a pretty well-trained thought process of, all right, that's a little wild, or that's enough for tonight. But I think that fear is the easiest surface level emotion, that if you don't push through that, it can be very consuming for people.
I think fear is my number one emotion based on those four. I'm not hopeful, although I think there is some of that there. It does make me angry sometimes. I think the lying makes me angry. The amount of crap that they expect you to swallow that's so ridiculous makes me angry. And what they're doing to the country. I think the Democrats are just doing terrible, terrible things to the country. So that makes me angry, but it makes me fearful more than anything.
If you have fear and if you have anger, you will naturally seek an antidote to that, which is where hope comes in. But it's also important to understand where you're placing that hope. And, you know, I'm going to briefly set aside the religious aspect of it, which to me is a given. To me, it's more important to have a hope and an idea, and then find people who are pursuing that same idea, as opposed to putting your hope into a person who will inevitably, one way or the other, fail you along the line. Let's talk about it when we come back, and your YouTube responses for the poll. We'll be right back. Reach out to Stewie, call, text 314-324-4440, or you can just Google The Bagel Loan to find out more. You'll get connected to him there. All right, Stewie, we appreciate you. We'll be back with Ryan and Brad in just a minute. Don't go away.
I hear the drums echoing tonight.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Just got done speaking with Stewie. I appreciate so much when he comes in and talks about these economic things. And there's so much noise that goes around it politically. I was just thinking today that, well, I was watching news come in last night on Twitter. I usually try to, especially on Sundays. There's not as much like news being reported on Sunday nights. there's a lot of long form shows or whatever. So I don't really watch TV, but I read a lot of Twitter, try to catch up on things. And the economic news that was coming out of Eastern markets, and, you know, there's sensational things on X that are like, tomorrow is World War III. Tomorrow starts World War III. And it just makes you go, holy crap.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at stuff and I'm always like, what is your source? And maybe I'm finding out ground level stuff, but I can't live like that, because I could go to sleep panicking about the absolute worst possible outcomes taking place on Monday, fall asleep reading it, wake up the next morning and not realize until the next night that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the emotional ask is huge if you want to be super plugged in and know everything. And I just find myself doing that on Sunday nights the most, because I go to different places to get caught up on the news. On any weeknight when they're running the news, I can check out the different cable news networks and find out what everyone's saying. I can consume it through clips that are being published to social media outlets and stuff. But it's a tough go. That's what the kind of genesis of our poll today. What does this news cycle make you feel? Fear, hope, anger, or apathy? I think that everybody who's answering this question can pretty easily say all of the above. But I do think it's also important to look at those different things and just reflect on where you're living the most at the current moment in time.
It doesn't make me apathetic. I know that. It makes me want to be apathetic and unable to do it, because I can't completely disengage. And I don't think it's because of what we do.
If you weren't doing this, though, you might be able to do it. Sometimes I wonder if I would be more intense about it if I didn't do this for a living. It's like having to be in it all the time. I have a pretty well trained thought process of, all right, that's a little wild, or that's enough for tonight. But I think that fear is the easiest surface level emotion, that if you don't push through that, it can be very consuming for people.
I think fear is my number one emotion based on those four. I'm not hopeful. Although I think there is some of that there. It does make me angry sometimes. I think the lying makes me angry. The amount of crap that they expect you to swallow that's so ridiculous makes me angry. And what they're doing to the country. I think the Democrats are just doing terrible, terrible things to the country. So that makes me angry, but it makes me fearful more than anything.
If you have fear and if you have anger, you will naturally seek an antidote to that, which is where hope comes in. But it's also important to understand where you're placing that hope. And, you know, I'm going to briefly set aside the religious aspect of it, which to me is a given. It's more important to have a hope and an idea, and then find people who are pursuing that same idea, as opposed to putting your hope into a person who will inevitably, one way or the other, fail you along the line. Let's talk about it when we come back, and your YouTube responses for the poll. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.